to see a human being suffer and to be able to help them to be who they want to be is my gift.
That was Steve Uria. This is Marnie Salop. Thanks for tuning into my podcast, Marnie on the Move. Each week, I will be inviting interesting, innovative movers and shakers to join me on the show and share their story. You will discover and hear from thought leaders, experts, influencers, and entrepreneurs from the worlds of wellness, sports, beauty, fitness, fashion, and more. Marnie on the Move will feature an eclectic mix of people I know, work with, and think are generally doing cool things. On each episode, I sync up with my guests about life, career, and training, and showcase their expertise and story. On today's episode, I sync up with fitness industry visionary and pioneer, former military special forces PTI, and the founder of Switch Playground, Steve Uria. Switch Playground is a popular fitness studio that recently opened its second New York City location. Originally from Cape Town, South Africa, Switch is a total body, sweat-drenching group workout with a philosophy that extends beyond just challenging one's body and is designed to activate the mind and fuel the soul. Over the past three decades, Steve's innovative classes and programs have revolutionized the fitness industry, including the very first boot camp, which launched in Atlanta in 1997, thanks to Steve. His roots in South Africa's Special Forces military training provided him the foundation to push beyond preconceived limits and pursue personal empowerment, a philosophy he continually practices and a passion he inspires in others. Whether training the many beginners who come to his classes or the professional athletes he has worked with, including Oscar De La Hoya, Jamel Lewis, Charles Barkley, Steve's mission is simple: to bring out the very best in each client, having them leave feeling stronger and better, empowering them for success. You will certainly be inspired, moved, and feel empowered from today's episode as Steve shares his philosophy on training, nutrition, life, and most importantly, his family. We sync up about his journey thus far, building a brand and studio in New York City, and he shares his 14-year-old son's heartwarming transition story and how he, as a parent, learned about pride, strength, and confidence on a whole new level. I hope you enjoy. Today's episode is fueled by Sum Potion. I am such a huge fan of their super high-quality tonic herbs, mushrooms, and superfoods. I started using these transformational foods and supplements around 2 years ago, and they have been serious game changers for my health, my energy levels, and even my sleep. Typically, I alternate between their Yin Power Potion and Ashwagandha for all things balance, Cordyceps if I'm feeling low energy and want to boost my workout, or Chaga when my immune system is feeling taxed. I simply add it to my morning coffee or smoothie, and I'm on the move. Sum Potion offers a variety of rejuvenating, restorative, and healing organic supplements and transformational foods. Head over to their website, sumpotion.com, and see for yourself. Also, don't forget to subscribe to Marnie on the Move on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Android. And of course, you can go to our website at MarnieOnTheMove.com. And while you're there, sign up for our newsletter because we have some exciting announcements, deals, and giveaways. Thanks again for tuning in to Marnie on the Move.
I've suffered with bad vocal issues for, you know, having screamed since the military for 20-something years. And it just gets sometimes really, really bad. So I was meant to have surgery on polyps and vocal adhesions, etc., scar tissue, hemorrhage, whatever, which I avoid surgery if I can.
Yeah.
And so a very good friend of mine, Jen Widerstrom, who was the coach on The Biggest Loser show on NBC, who's she's one of my best people, came to my class Saturday. It's just funny how life works. And I was talking to her, well, barely after the class, and she just said, I'm setting you up with my person. You've got to go see her. And amazing woman. She mailed me and went there, and just it wasn't about, I thought she was an ENT, you know, it wasn't right. about, oh, let's see what we've got going on here, it was let's fix it. And just it was all about diaphragmic breathing and the restrictions, because we are, especially in fitness, your postural integrity and core tightness and guardedness. And it was brilliant. She compared it to a dog or a child under 5. You'll see when they breathe, expansion and contraction of the rib cage.
Right.
And as we get older, it goes up because we close and become protected and guarded. And then right. it ends up being up here that you breathe. And you're using like 10% of your lung capacity. So
what did you learn at the vocal coach about breathing?
Well, very interestingly, as I said, you know, from the tests that she did, first she did an acidity test, which measures the alkalinity in your saliva, which comes from obviously the oxygen output and the carbon dioxide output, from breathing. And then it tested my rib cage and diaphragm movement and showed me all these different techniques. So, you know, I've been practicing, and it kind of feels weird for me because you've got to really distend your stomach when you fill your lungs mm-hmm. with air all the way down to the pelvic floor, really. You know, it's almost like doing cat-cow postures in yoga, but sitting up and using your diaphragm to breathe. And it's amazing. It feels quite liberating, actually, you know. So I've been for 3 days practicing that, and I learned a lot. But she actually works with a lot of special forces, SWAT medics, emergency responders, and teachers across the globe. So for me, that was cool to learn to finally use my lung capacity, being in the fitness and human movement world forever, for always trying to improve and help people be better at themselves and living in their own skin. It was nice to learn something more internalized from an expert. So pretty cool stuff. So that's what I've been working on, and I've taken a week off teaching for vocal rest. So I actually have a voice now, which is pretty
it's
cool.
It's so interesting, because a lot of the time you get so involved in your work and the day-to-day, and you know, one of the number one rules of being successful day-to-day is taking care of yourself.
Yeah, you're useless so without good. Being, you know, without being your very best, you can't preach, you know, you can't share.
Right, and you're, I would, how much, what percent of what you do is you speaking?
Well, everything. Yeah. You know, motivation, education. I mean, the physical obviously is a huge part of it, but even breath for that is crucial. So I've been doing well. I found yoga several years ago, which was a saving grace for me as well. Never really got into the breathing aspect of it,
right.
but just the focus and being present and the mind angle, which actually became a very integral part of what Switch Playground is the mind, body, and soul. It's not just about one component. It's about, you know, helping you be the best you can be in all facets. And mind was one of those. And subsequently, you know, I created Switch Playground on the yoga mat. You know, when I sold one idea that I had and I moved on to another one, a concept, I created Switch All on a yoga mat over several months. And just the focus, you know, it takes you a while to get into the movements, obviously, and then realizing what they mean and the significance of poses and...
In yoga, yeah.
And after a few months, you finally get it when you're in these... In these different poses and postures, you finally connect with yourself,
yeah.
you know, and you feel yourself in a different dimension. So, you know, I highly recommend yoga to everybody. I have my cage fighters even doing it now, and football players, because it is such a huge part of your mindset. And obviously the body leads the mind leads the body into, you know, what you can and can't do, your limitations or that you don't have limitations, you know. So it's a very huge component. So when people walk into our class and the first 7 minutes is this flow yoga, not just from a dynamic warm-up point of view, but also to literally switch, and I say the switch off from everything except being present for the 20 challenges you're about to endure, and also connecting with yourself, your phone, your computer, everything that rules us. And you see it so clearly in New York City, walking around. No one even looks at each other. Everyone's on their phone.
Right.
Walking through the streets, and then you go into a coffee shop and no one's even looking up anymore.
Yeah.
So that engagement factor is gone, and you're not even, no one's connected with themselves, because it's all about social media and emails and the hype and the nonstop communication era we live in. So, yeah, I think yoga is absolutely crucial for the mind.
Well, you're preaching to the choir because I've been practicing yoga for probably like 15 years.
Okay, cool.
And it's always different. You know, I practice Ashtanga with Eddie Stern, and he was a guest on the podcast, one of my first guests. He has a new app that you might find interesting called the Breathing App, and I'll email it to you. He did it with Chris Martin and Deepak Chopra, and it's free.
Deepak, he's a nice guy.
Yeah. So anyway, yoga is one of the fundamental things everybody should really do, I think, too. So yeah, so tell me a little bit about Switch Playground and what the concept is and how you started it and how it's evolved.
Okay. Well, as I said, people had a phrase for me, the conceptual athlete, because I've always had this forward thinking. As I said to you earlier, my life is dedicated to studying movement patterns, human movement, what makes people better in different aspects, you know, from the evolution of military training, where I rewrote the induction program for new recruits coming in for boot camps after I finished my college degree, which was in sports administration. So there was a big phys ed component. I went into the military and became a PTI, which is like a drill sergeant, etc. And then just watching what the needs were, they still were practicing or doing stuff from the Second World War as far as phys ed goes. And I just brought in new elements, etc. So I've always been fascinated by the ability of the human being and human movement. And I've always believed in training the way you move or the way you need to apply yourself. So for me, very early, I discovered that functional training way back, I'm talking late 80s before functional training was anything, was such a crucial element because the movement patterns would duplicate functional moves you do every day in life, picking up something, putting it on a shelf, like a reverse wood chopper, for example, movement, or a front lunge rotation. You may lean forward and bend to the side. And these things are very real to train your body for real life things. Exercises like a lying leg press in the gym where you're on your back with it, pushing up and down, is the most antiquated, idiotic move, I believe, ever, because you never do that. There's no time. The only time you do that is when you're wearing your little shorts in the gym and all the girls are standing around and you put all the plates on the machine. Uh-huh. It's an ego thing for me. A leg extension or open chain movement like that for me is a great rehabilitation movement, but it's not really an open chain where you're kicking your legs up with weights across. You don't do that ever. So closed chain, feet on the ground, lunge, squat, explosive, plyometric, whatever it is that applications for life are always incorporated into the exercises I did. So obviously having that military background, when I was in Atlanta, Georgia, doing personal training, I realized people wanted to be outside in the summer. So I thought, you know what, it's a good opportunity to start a military type thing, just physical training. And I went to an army surplus store and bought a drill sergeant uniform and had t-shirts made, camo t-shirts. And I took 7 of my top clients, regular clients, I should say, to the park up the road from the gym at 5:30 a.m. And we started doing this outdoor training, running hills, using the benches in the mud. It was fun. And I worked with Dr. Sanjay Gupta from CNN, who does the well and the health. And I invited him out, and he came and then brought the CNN camera crew, and boot camp was born, which is now really cool. It's across the world. Everyone does boot camps. So that was one of my contributions to fitness. And I think that was in like 94. And obviously from there, I started training a lot of athletes. So what happened is one of my clients, who was a sports agent, asked me about a football player, if I'd be willing to train someone who was a huge first-round draft pick, huge prospect. He's playing for the Baltimore Ravens, and he's 265 pounds and needs to be 230 by the end of the offseason. So I embarked on this training journey with Jamal Lewis from the Baltimore Ravens and gave him an eating plan and trained him as if he was, you know, I trained Oscar De La Hoya back in the day in Big Bear, California. So I actually trained Jamal as if he was getting ready to do a fight for 3 months. So it was like a training camp. But I knew that in football training, these guys did Olympic lifts, strength, power, all the, I call one-dimensional movements. But then I didn't know much about football. I was a rugby guy from South Africa, and I loved the athleticism of football players, but I didn't understand what the movement requirements were. So I studied, he was a running back. I studied tape of running backs, and saw how much of their footwork and agility speed came from cutting and moving. And so I started doing sort of work with him that was related to that, with the resistance bands, lateral chops, side movements, explosive, everything I saw him having to do on the field, as well as the diet, as well as the boxing training and fighting training. And him and a bunch of his friends would come in and we'd work together. It was a fun off season. Anyway, we got him down to 230 something pounds. He went in, and the second game of the season against the Cleveland Browns, he beat the all-time rushing record in the NFL. So he ran 295 yards in one game, which smashed the record. So that's after huge. That, it was huge. 100 yards in a game is huge for a running back. So after that, I was with him on ESPN and Fox Sports, and then I had all the agents on me. I ended up with about 28 guys. This is how it all evolved.
No, but this is a story that I want to hear.
So it's a cool story. So I ended up training a lot of the NFL guys, and then I had Charles Barkley from the NBA, obviously, came. Right. I trained him, the monstrous man that he is, super cool guy, and a lot of superstar NFL guys. And I helped them also, being young guys, psychologically, I brought in a lot of the components of the mental aspect, telling them, you know, you guys can go to a game and you can either be a guy in a helmet on the field with a number on your back, or you can be the guy. I said, you've got 5 years maybe in the NFL to be your all-time best. You know, there's 50,000 people who'd love to be and trying to be you. And right. You have the opportunity. So don't just rely on raw talent. You've got you because of that. But let's use that and eat properly, fuel yourself. I'd say to them, you know, you guys are the Ferrari of the human being. If you put regular gas in a Ferrari, it's going to go. But if you put premium gas in a Ferrari, it's going to perform.
Yeah.
And I helped them become the best version of themselves. And so I'd had all of them. And what I used to do is a lot of boxing stuff with them. Uh-huh. So the next evolution was creating a kickboxing studio with a ring and all these bags for women and these guys to train. And most of the boxing gyms at the time were for fighters.
Right.
And a lot of people were intimidated to go there. So I actually built a studio that had 28 bags hanging, a ring on the one side, and it was only for fitness. There was no fighters there. And I worked on that. That was in Atlanta, Georgia. Yes. Okay. So I did that. And it became a hit as well. It was the second concept that I created for group fitness. Just natural evolvement. I didn't plan on it.
What was it called?
Well, it was part of my Eclipse One-on-One, was my personal training gym. So I called it Eclipse Extreme Kickboxing.
Okay.
And there we would do, but within that, I integrated body bars, resistance bands, dumbbell movements. They actually called me Jane Fonda because I used to do a light dumbbell. Yeah, back in the day, right? So I used to do, and I still do to this day, I implement the Jane, we call it, into all my concepts. So we take light dumbbells, 1 pound or 2 pounds, and 20 minutes to music, do a sort of a choreographed boxing hybrid type movement with all the different boxing and jumping. And it's really cool. It's a lot of fun. People love it. So we used to do that. And then I'd work one-on-one in the ring with obviously all these athletes and a lot of, you know, the women who I trained at the gym loved the football players and the integration. You know,
I have a question about mindset.
Yes.
Because you're working with these like top performing Ferrari athletes.
Correct.
And then you have women and men that are just coming to work out in your gym. So,
And
then your background is in the military.
Right.
So are you taking this mindset? Is that sort of, you're taking that from your military training to working with the top athletes and then sort of translating that and making people who are just everyday sort of fitness goers feel like they're training as if they're an elite athlete or professional
athlete? Well, I like people to believe, it's a great question. I like people to be the best version of themselves. So for me, it's especially with Switch Playground and my concept prior to this, which was Sweat 1000, which was a treadmill-based workout, was you work at your level, but you work just outside your comfort zone. So you always challenge yourself, but you're not trying to be the athlete. You're trying to be your athlete. So for me, it's in my classes, you know, right now we've got people from Olympic athletes to guys in their late 60s in the same room. And they will both walk out of there with the experiential component that they wanted, as well as the athletic push that they wanted. So you can use your cardio parts of the workout as a recovery, active rest, or you can go as hard as you want. There's always a step down version to every exercise. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of Switch Playgrounds, we have multiple trainers in the room. So there's usually between, depending on the size of the class, but between one trainer will man three stations. So you do 20 stations in every class, but okay, sometimes the classes go up to 65 people. So we'll go to 35 stations hypothetically, but you will complete 20. So when I write the class, it's got to be well-rounded all the way around because it's total body, functional core, resistance, cardio. I throw every element of fitness into that class, but it's so choreographed that each station has to be fine-tuned enough that you're hitting the whole body, whether you're going from 1 to 20, 17 to whatever the next 20 are. So regardless of where you are, you'll do 20. But when you get there, those trainers will demonstrate your movement pattern at that station. Should you have restriction, limitation, or injury, they are trained to then back down or modify according to your injuries or limitations. And that's the beauty of Switch Playground compared to, I believe, any of the fitness boutiques or workouts out there where you're in a group environment. Obviously, one-on-one or small groups is easy. Mm-hmm. But when you're out there in these big classes of 20-plus people and there's only one instructor, it's impossible to correct form, technique. And I'm a purist by nature. I love to see things being done correctly. I mean, even on myself, you know, when people look at me and say, wow, you're 49, I can't believe what you look like. It's because I dedicate my life to this and I am start with me, you know. So right, when I walk in a group fitness room or even into the big box gyms and I see people doing something wrong, I can't help but correct them. And I see, you know, so if you arrive at a station and we tell people before the class, you know, if you have any injuries or need modification, please tell the trainers. So you have a bad knee, if it's a box jump, they'll give you a second kind of movement pattern.
Right.
So to answer your question, yes, this caters to everybody. And also, if we see athletes in the room, obviously, if there's a box jump, for example, we'll add a height to the box and also add a burpee component or something that's more challenging or give them a light slam ball to hold while they're doing that. So you will be able to, and having the multiple trainers gives us the ability to even give that personal training element to a group fitness environment.
That's what I was going to say. It sounds a lot. Like, I've taken the class and it's really amazing.
Thank you.
Challenging in a good way. And I took it with someone who really didn't do a ton of training. Like,
right,
she wasn't an athlete and didn't really work out. So I think like in line with what you're saying, I mean, it's definitely, I like the attention from the you know, having like two or three trainers watching what I'm doing.
Right.
And also being in a group environment because it's fun and high energy. And I love the music and
the experiential component.
Yes.
See, when we started in New York City, what unfortunately the perception was, this is a crazy nightclub workout. You got to go try it. And the programming that is so crucial and the authenticity that is what I build my brand on was secondary to the DJ, the trainers, the lights, the smoke, the whole craziness.
Right.
I removed the smoke element, even though it was a natural water vapor, but it was too much. It took away too much from actually the people's focus. And also people felt they couldn't breathe because of the, you know, perception's reality. So there was this perception that, oh my God, there's smoke in here. I can't breathe. It wasn't.
Right.
But why complicate something? We didn't need it, you know.
Right.
So people are now realizing the authenticity. And I keep saying that because there's so many things out there today that are Insta fame, Insta glory, have your picture taken at the hottest workout place. But when you dig deep into what the programming is of the place, a lot of it isn't scientific or physiologically brilliant enough to be getting the recognition it does get. And I'm going to stress and say to you that as a fitness advocate for my whole life, dedicating to the cause, I believe in everything. I believe in all things fitness.
Yes.
As you know, I don't compete on any level with anybody else out there except ourselves. And I tell all my instructors, our competition is yesterday. How did we do yesterday? And are we better today? And that's what I bring to the table. I encourage everybody to do spinning, yoga, Pilates, whatever's going on.
Yeah.
Some of the movement patterns I disagree with when you're, you know, riding a bicycle really fast and you're gyrating forward and backward, you're anatomically pushing your hips into these compromised positions is not good for the back.
That's not
the
something
legs
that you do anyway. You shouldn't really,
but it's fun. And you know what? For most people, it does give that element of fun because people generally don't like to exercise.
Right.
So the psychology behind that is if you make the experience fun, it's not exercise. And the perception is this is a fun way to get in shape. You become a part of a community of people and you feel like you belong. And that's where a lot of the psychological boutique fitness success comes from. Several concepts did a brilliant job with that. Others have done a brilliant job with social media marketing, Insta fame. Brilliant. I give them props. I think it's amazing. But for me, the end of the day is the authenticity of why people are coming to me and to my studio and what they're going to take away from it. So we're seeing a lot of people now. We've never marketed one day in New York yet. We've done no marketing. We've done our own little social media campaigns internally.
Right.
But it wasn't about that. I wanted to come in to the most hostile environment or most competitive, I say, even though I don't compete with them. And just see how we did here. I always wanted to be on the main stage, which was New York City. If you have boutique fitness, this is where the mecca of it is. So we're seeing a lot of people who come from all over the world on these getaway fitness retreats, which I think is amazing. You know, there was a time it was restaurants. Now they do both.
Right.
So you'll get groups of women or men or both who come to New York and they go book all the hot spots. And hearing the feedback about all the different things they try, and it's amazing to be part of that. You know, that's why I wanted to be in New York. I had a hugely successful...
You had another studio.
Well, I created boutique fitness in South Africa. And by saying created it, I literally did. There were the big box gyms. And I took my concept, which I started in Atlanta after the kickboxing, just to go back, was called Blast 900, which was treadmill and floor, like, you know, some of the popular concepts today. But mine was different in that I didn't just utilize one piece of equipment on the floor. I brought in everything. So there was boxing, there was resistance, there was the body weight, there was the suspension training. And every day you'd come, it would be different. For me, that was the key, and it still is that the programming is different every single day. So when you come to a Switch Playground class, you will never do the same workout twice. Every day I rewrite a new program. So we will obviously utilize the same equipment, whether it be a kettlebell or body bar or whatever it is. It will be moved around the room, so psychologically you have a different area to play in, and it's called a playground because it is just that for adults. And the movement pattern will be totally different. So what we do is a two-minute interval, and within that we've got four 30-second modules, and in those modules you'll do different movement patterns. So whether it's a swing on the kettlebell swings and then into a back lunge press or whatever it is, the next day you come, it'll be a burpee upright row and a bent over row with a kettlebell, hypothetically. And the instructors will say, your first 30 seconds, you're going to do this. Then your second, you go to the other side, or they'll show you what to do. And then they run to the next two stations and do that. But going back to the treadmill workout, so I had these treadmills that went to a 30% incline. So we used to do a lot of lunges at high levels. So you're getting the posterior chain. And, you know, I've always just challenged the body on every level every day. So you can't get used to a movement pattern. The body is a brilliant machine. And if you get into a rut where you're doing the same thing all the time, you will not change.
How long do you recommend doing the same workout? 30 days and then change it up? Or you can change it up every day?
I believe in, listen, there's different types of exercise. So for bodybuilding per se or muscle gain, you'll do body parts in the gym. I even think every workout you should do different movement patterns. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's limitations. If your bicep curls, you've got variations of a curl, hammer curl or Zottman curls or reverse curls or, you know, whatever it is. So always bring in all the elements, bring in different ways of doing it, resistance bands and dumbbells and bars and cables. So, you know, the movement on a cable machine or a selectorized machine is completely different to a free weight. You know, the machines, there was a big conversation back in the day of machines aren't as effective because you're not working your assistor muscles, you know, because it's a set plane. It's got a hinged joint that moves with your joint and you don't use any supporting muscles because it's already doing that for you.
Right.
But do both, you know, so there's benefits to both. As long as it's all, you know, within a safe environment and you're not, I can't stress enough again, and my mind goes all the time because I keep going. But,
no.
But women come to me especially and say, I'm not lifting weights because I'm getting big. I've had women walk into our studio upstairs here and say, I'm not doing any arms. I just want to do legs today. Well, it's a total body, high-intensity interval training, preset class. I'm not sure what you mean. you know. So do
that's
what
always
you can.
Been some kind of that's always it's, been it's a myth with
because,
people
you know, women generally don't have the testosterone which boosts that massive muscle growth. Yes, resistance training does cause some more testosterone to be utilized, but your body balances it out with the estrogen.
Right.
As I said, the body's a brilliant machine. It gets used to movements and it doesn't get the rapid results, so challenge it. If you do something, your body will counter it. You know, that's
right.
How we work. I look at people who don't eat, they eat garbage. They literally don't even think about what they're putting in their system, yet they function.
Right.
So they get up in the morning, they drank the night before, which has worked the liver and the sugars and the glycogen and everything's all messed up.
Right.
They don't drink enough water to help flush the liver and kidneys. So they're under duress already, but yet they get up, they eat a sandwich and off they go and the body lets them live.
Right.
So that's why for me, it's pretty incredible if you do the right thing, how amazing it is. I mean, you could be completely hungover and your body repairs itself in 2 days, you know.
What do you do to work out? Like, what fuels you? I mean, now that you're running this business.
I find time. I always make time. And that's the one thing people, and that's the one thing Switch Playground does do for you, is it's time management. With the world as chaotic as it is today, if you just have an hour, why not maximize? So we throw in cardio, yoga, strength, functional, all the elements, like I said, into a 1 hour class. So you don't have to worry about what time should I do my cardio and when will I do my weights and what about doing chest and then this. So balances everything. But for me personally, because of the years I've had, so I do boxing classes or kickboxing classes that I go to at
right.
other studios because I love some of them.
Uh-huh.
Not all of them, but I do love some of them. I do the yoga and then I do every morning I'll do metabolic workouts. So cardio and high intensity training, like a switch class. And then sometimes in the evenings, if I have the time, I'll do just resistance training. So specific body parts. But more importantly is how you fuel your body in order to sustain that.
Right.
Because success is sustainability. And for me, the nutrition, and for not me, for everybody, is everything. So I could keep doing the same workouts all the time. If I change my eating, I will see a change. That's crazy. I don't, because I'm OCD to the point that I have discipline that
What's
I wish
your
I
diet
could package
like?
It. It's crazy. I mean, it's complete balance. You know, I've done all the different things to study it so I could preach it.
Okay.
From ketogenic eating to paleo to high carb to balance. And now, you know, then I looked at calories. People were like, calorie deficit. Obviously, it is true. The calorie in, calorie out factor will determine your body fat. But, you know, I think the most important thing is to look at what are those calories coming from. So when you start really looking at your eating, it's about what works for each individual. Some people do have a higher tolerance for burning sugars or glycogen or can
right.
have more carbohydrates. And some, so I think macro is the most important. Look at what your macros are of your diet. And by that, I mean, when something has, so some, a lot of the women especially go, well, that is 300 calories. I'm not having that.
Right.
Where do they come from, those calories? And when I have those calories, what do they do for my body? So something like nuts that are really good for you or have a good fat component, but very high calorie, what do they do for my body? So if I'm not having carbs, they're going to give me energy because it's a sort of a ketogenic burn. So you keep your body constantly burning fat, but the minute you introduce a carb, now there's a glycogen supply, so your body stores the fat and you put on fat.
Right.
It's simple. I mean,
right.
But I don't, you know, life is too complicated as it is. So one of our few escapes or one of our few beautiful things to do every day is to eat.
Right.
You know, and I mean, especially in New York City, you could find 10,000 calories in 2 blocks, you know, just without even trying.
Right.
So just think about what you're eating and think about what is this food or what is this doing for my body rather
right.
than, oh my God, I can't have it. So I say to people, like they say, do you have a cheat day? No, I don't. I don't, when I say cheat, so for me, I'll have a higher carbohydrate day.
Right.
Is my cheat day. So I'll go to one of these, there's so many cool places here, but you'll find vegan type foods or one of these restaurants that it's all wellness, all organic. Because for me, what you put in your body with the mass production and genetic modified foods today, I'm very cautious what I put in my body. However, people make the mistake of going out and buying organic pineapples, organic bananas. There's
right.
no point. They have a thick skin. Nothing's getting in there.
Right.
So
certain
be smart because
yes.
it's expensive.
Yes.
You know, so meat products, dairy products, anything that comes from a mammal that has a sort of genetic makeup like we do almost,
mm-hmm.
be careful. So they yeah. put hormones in milk. That's why 8-year-old girls have breasts today.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
So the source of what you're eating is crucial. High sugars, be careful of hidden sugars in foods. When they even put net impact carbs, just stay close to the source, and anything that's overly modified or messed with is obviously going to be detrimental to you. So high fructose corn syrups are artificially created sweetening agents that are cheap that your body doesn't even know what it is. So when that goes into your body, it doesn't know what to do with it.
Right.
It actually just messes with your system. So your body's confused. So just hidden things in labeling, you know, all these sugar alcohols and all these things, they're just ways of disguising sugar, you know.
Yeah.
So just be careful with that. That's what I tell people. But for me, yeah, so training every day and fueling my body, my diet is a balance of good carbohydrates, usually low glycemic carbs, mm-hmm. sweet potato and oatmeal. Those would be and rice actually are my go-tos.
Yeah.
And then
– me too.
And yeah, that's why, you know, because you're fueling your body and then yeah. – obviously, your clean proteins, your meats and or legumes that are lentils or, you know, stuff that fuels your quinoa.
Right.
Those sort of things. So it's what time you eat them is also crucial. So you should cut your carbohydrate intake by lunchtime as your last complex carbohydrate meal, because your body stores carbs as glycogen, because a carbohydrate is a sugar.
Right.
It's a complex. It's a polysaccharide, which is a sugar. Yeah, unless – and your metabolism slows through the day. So you wake up in the morning, you're hungry because that's when your metabolism's at its fastest. Your body's repaired and recuperated. You haven't eaten for several hours and your body's now is a metabolic flame. So that's why the people should be very careful with what you consume from beginning to end, because even though your metabolism's really fast in the morning, you go throw in a high sugar meal, cereal or one of those things that are pure sugars. Your body's working so hard to break those down that you've actually retarded it for the rest of the day. And also, definitely eat frequently. Every 3 hours, you should put something in your system to keep your metabolic flame burning. The misconception with a lot of, and I say women because I've seen it with eating disorders, is they don't eat all day. And then they have a salad for dinner. And then you get that thin fat look where you're skinny, but you're hanging skin because your body's has cannibalized its own lean mass. Your body yeah. will always store fat.
Mm-hmm.
It's to survive, for your thermogenics, to keep your body warm, to protect your organs from injury. It's a sort of a buffer inside. So your body's naturally going to hold fat and it'll burn muscle, and it's the wrong way around. You don't want to go catabolic on your own self,
right.
you know. So people say, what about intermittent fasting? I'm not a believer in any extreme anything.
You know?
I'm extreme. I'd say, yeah, I mean, I'm extreme myself. But very calculatedly so. It's never – I don't starve myself. I still find good things to eat, and anyone can. I mean, you can find a good choice anywhere.
So now I was going to ask you, do you cook?
I do cook. I do cook, but I also have some meal prep services that I work with.
Okay.
And I also have found several go-to restaurants in and around New York where I know that I'm getting good, clean sources of food. So – just doing your research of any place you are, you can definitely find.
That's what I do. I mean, because I'm always
you're on the move.
Working and on the move, and so also training. And
But the worst thing you can do is to train and then not fuel your body, because you actually cannot recover
and
get injured.
I feel like sometimes, you know, I really need to, for me as an athlete, you know, in doing triathlons, like I actually, normally I would probably just eat like normal, like all day, I just have breakfast or lunch, but I actually need to really put some energy behind and thought behind what I eat, because I need to really eat a lot more.
Well, as an athlete, you are burning way more calories than what someone who's not doing anything is, or light exercise.
Yeah.
Endurance athletes for me are, you're a machine that needs to be fueled, and your caloric burn is tenfold what it should be. So you've got to adjust accordingly.
Yeah.
So there were some people who did the high fat eating, and they said that because of that, as an endurance athlete, you're better off than having the goo and all that syrup stuff during a race. You don't need it.
No.
Because when you're fueling yourself on fat, you've always got a fat store. So your body will turn to that to keep that metabolic ketogenic flame burning. You know, I'm not an endurance athlete. I think it's great, but I do believe that you suffer from some muscle breakdown and you will lose muscle. And for me, I'm not about that, but I'd respect it completely. I think any Ironman or half Ironman for me, or marathon or whatever, it's impressive. It's an amazing accomplishment. I think
runners and triathletes, I think it's really important that they also, train.
Yeah, well, you should
the gym
do other
and
stuff
do because, strength training and all the functional training that you do here as well. It's helpful for me.
We see people who run, tunnel vision type people who just run or just ride.
Right.
And then they come in here and they die. Listen, I know there's people who don't like being inside to train.
Right.
So I get it. It's not for everybody. But you should always balance your body, because if you hyper focused on legs, your body's not in balance.
Yeah.
So, for example, a lot of the girls who just do spinning will come into our classes to try it. And they come in and say, well, that was all upper body and not enough legs. And I'll be saying, but guess what? There was more legs, but because you spin, your legs work.
Right.
Your upper body's not used to any resistance training, so you were suffering.
Yeah.
So where you crushed through the legs and didn't feel it because you do legs, you need to work on upper and core strength, especially on a bike. You're not in a good postural position anatomically, so you actually end up swooping forward. Your shoulders are drooping forward and you're not carrying your posture correctly because your core is suffering. You cannot, whether they tell you dancing on a bike is working your core, it's not. Again, core is not just stomach. Core is everything that holds your postural integrity. So erector spinae or spinal erector muscles, even the upper back muscles for me is core, the glutes, everything that holds you upright. And people's perception is that core is doing abs and they've done core. They haven't, it's just educating people, and it's not anyone's fault who hasn't studied it. But that's why as an educator and someone who's been given the gift of helping people be better, I like people to understand what they're doing. And certain things that people do, they don't calculate. So they've got these packages at all the different studios and they don't have any rhythm or reason or rhyme for what they're doing each day. They just think, oh, I'm going to choose this class today. I'm going to do that. Try and figure out what balances your body properly. So you must have the yoga component for mind and stretching and flexibility and breathing. You've got to have your strength component and your core strengthening component, and make sure you have a well-rounded routine that's challenging you enough. And again, I'm not promoting Switch Playground entirely here, but I've captured that in a one-hour class. So for 34 years, I've done fitness and I've devoted my life to that, and I love what I do. And if you ask me what is Switch, Switch is my final dance. Switch is 34 years culminated into a one-hour class that will give everybody, no matter what your fitness level, a challenging, fun workout where the primary focus is the programming and what your body's going to get out of it. And the secondary is the experience you have, the DJ live who's playing these tunes. Because generally, when you hear a great song, you feel motivated, energetic, and you forget what you're doing.
Right.
It's like people say, I forgot my headset, I can't work out today. And other people can't understand that. It's like, wow, if you put your headset in, it makes you work out. No, but it takes the pain away. You know? So you hear a song you love, you'll crush through the workout.
Right.
You're listening to music you don't like, it's the worst thing in the world. So I've tried to take those things. So what happened in the past is, how do you scale a concept that it's not about you? And that's a question I often get. And by having a lead instructor who's on the mic, who's calling your time and your motivation, they have to be a superstar. But the team on the floor is preaching the movement. So you get to share different personalities and energies, which is great. A lot of off-Broadway dancers and actors are my trainers because they get human movement patterns. We certify them in our fitness training. And then they're also entertaining people while they're working out. And the DJ is playing a genre of music that they'll hit on every kind. So it's if it's a throwback remix of, It's Raining Men, to the latest hip-hop songs, to even some opera that's been, hyper made into techno music.
Right.
It's something for everyone. And that's the thing. So a lot of people follow their trainers around the city who have great music to spin classes.
Is the fitness scene similar in South Africa?
No. As I said, they told me before I started Boutique Fitness, it will never work there because everyone can join a big box gym.
Uh-huh.
And in there you have swimming pools and you have childcare and you have all the classes. And why would they pay double that for a class at your place. We did it and we created it. And it, the first concept I started, I ended up having nationally 8 stores across South Africa and sold that and then started Switch Playground. And we now have 4 with the scope of many more. So it's different in that there isn't the same amount of choice.
Are there spin studios
there,
also?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I'm good friends with Johnny G, who actually was the man who created spinning.
Right.
Johnny Goldberg, super,
yes,
super.
From LA.
Yeah, a brilliant human being. And he was the first to create spinning. So he was a cyclist and he was on his rollers. And he said, I'm going to create this thing. And everyone said, no one's going to sit on a bike for an hour and it'll never work. And 28 years later, it's the biggest phenomenon in the world. In every studio, in every country, in every city, no matter how big or small, spinning's everything. Yeah. And now there's 15 different choices of spinning. And some people have challenging spinning or where they wear the monitor so you're on a screen and you're challenging yourself and or you're in a Peloton or whatever it is, derivatives of spinning.
Right.
So Johnny's a brilliant guy and they have spin, they have yoga, they have dance, they have bar classes, they have Pilates. They have that, but not like in New York City where you know, there's treadmill-based classes, there's 15 choices or HIIT classes, there's 20 choices. So the landscape is different in that they don't have the same amount to choose from, but there's still the same mentality, yeah.
And is your family in South Africa?
Yes.
Or are they here?
They're there. So my whole family's in South Africa. I'm very fortunate to have a wife who understands my mission in life, and she has been my wingman through that. She's really been, you know, they say behind every successful man or woman, there's some significant other.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, definitely when I've been down or doubted or whatever, she's been my best cheerleader and also has been very crucial in building the brand identity from logo to creation to input, sometimes too much input, but that's what we're here for, right? So she understands that the quest for me was to get to New York City eventually. My past concept, I was meant to come out here and it didn't work out and everything works for a reason. So she knew there was a definite goal. They understand that this is for my family that I'm doing this. So I've had to leave them in South Africa. And by that, I'm not saying they're in the worst position. They live on the mountain looking at the ocean in a beautiful home. But I have a 20-year-old son who was with me here, who's now back there. I have an 18-year-old daughter who's in final year high school. And I have my youngest child who is a transgender. And he would kill me if I said that. He just wants to be he. His name's Luke, used to be Taryn. Very proud of him and what he's done in his life. So there's challenges. I've left behind parents who are getting older. And it's the sacrifice one makes to follow your passion and your dream and having the support of a family behind you. I mean, so many women I've met just said, your wife's amazing. I would never let you do that. You know, I mean, well, that's why you're not my wife.
Right.
You know, having an understanding and knowing there's a mission, there's a definite cause and a definite mission for what you're doing, it's very difficult. But with communication today and Skyping and WhatsApp video messaging, you hang out, you know, and probably more so than if you were together, you know, which... But yeah, the sacrifice is that one day my parents aren't going to be there and I'd missed out all these years. But I've told people you have to have a switch in order to survive, A, in New York and B, in doing what I do. And that is that you have to know that you compartmentalize your life completely. When I say goodbye to them, when I leave South Africa, I don't sit here and think about that. I sit here and my mission is this.
Right.
It's clear I'm here for a reason and I'm hyper-focused on Switch Playground and building a brand. When I do switch off literally at the end of the day and speak to them with a time change, it's difficult, then I'm present with them, you know. And that's something that I tell people about New York City. Oh, New York is so cool. New York's tough. New York is one of the most difficult places on the planet to live. And truthfully, the energy, you can either live with it or you can't. It's chaos and it's stress and it ages you because it is a machine that just doesn't stop. And either you participate in the workings of how the city works or you won't make it here.
It's like social media.
It's like social. It's like living in Instagram. But it's literally you are part of a beautiful machine.
Right.
But you either work with the machine or you work out of the machine and you get thrown out the other side. So you got to respect New York and you got to understand it. People say, well, would you do it again? Absolutely. I love what I've do here. I love the opportunity to be on the main stage and share my brand and my vision with the world. Has it had its moments? Absolutely. I've walked through the streets bawling sometimes as, and drawing on the same thing I did with special forces training in the military. I think I told you this the other day. That same survival technique that you have in the military, you have in New York City. And by that, I mean, you know, you finish high school or college or whatever, and you top of your game, you're the big deal of the school, and now you, the little kids are under you, and you come out of there feeling like Mr. Man. You go to the military and you lose your identity. I literally remember sitting in the mess one day when we were having lunch. They shaved all our heads, put us in a brown uniform. You didn't have a name anymore. You had a number on your, when you were in boot camp, you weren't called by name. You had a number that you were referred to.
Right.
And you totally were stripped of whoever you were, because what they do is, the mentality is to break you down to nothing and then build you into a soldier.
Right.
And I believe that in New York City, you come here, you think you're somebody somewhere in the world, and you're nothing. Nobody's right. anything here. So if you come here with millions of dollars in another country and think you the man in New York, you'll get beaten to a pulp in here, because there's always bigger, better. So you come here, you're respected, you learn from it, and you grow from it. And I think coming out of New York, you could probably survive anywhere in the world, literally. I mean, I've been Atlanta, Los Angeles, Johannesburg, Cape Town, London. You know, there's nothing like New York City.
And, well, you have to really have a mission that you're passionate about.
And clear and yeah. believe, because it will. One day you'll feel like 1 hour, 1 minute New York.
Yes,
you know, the New York minute is, you feel like I've got this.
Yeah.
I've made it. And then the next minute you're down again and you're like, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
So have your purpose, have your mission. And you know what I've learned from my child, my 13-year-old, more than anything, is strength of conviction and believing in who you are and what you are. As I said to you earlier, so a transgender, all Luke's life when he was Taryn, as a female, he was never happy. And we always were wondering, this child's a little off. And by off meaning not mainstream.
Right.
And I always knew Taryn was going to be something special, because, you know, all the kids would be playing, he would be sitting in the corner of the room creating brilliant videos on his phone, just disassociated and detached because of his obvious internal knowledge of not sure what was different about him.
Right.
But he wasn't a girl that I took bikini shopping, for example, and I didn't see it. But in retrospect, now when I look back, I see so much clearly of
right.
how Taryn wasn't Taryn.
And
know,
he wasn't able to articulate that.
He couldn't articulate that. And then at 12, said to me the one day we were, you know, we went on dates always together and we were having an ice cream, or he was, I wasn't, obviously. and he said to me, Dad, do you ever feel like you're in the wrong body? And I looked at him and I said, what do you mean by that? Stop talking nonsense. What do you mean wrong body? No, never mind. And I regret not digging further then. You know, because
right.
he was trying to say something to me and I didn't respond. And in talking further now, his biggest fear was me accepting him.
Right.
So his mom's amazing, as I said, with me, even having dealt with me all these years. But the way she's handled his transition and his coming out and his journey is mind-blowing. Dedicated 1,000,000%, convincing me and then trying to convince my father, who's super old school.
Right.
You know, like I talk to a millennial now and I'm like, yeah, I've got the transgender child. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell my
it's
generation
the normal,
they can't get it.
Especially in New York City, though.
In New York, listen, it's amazing. I was walking. I was told there's a guy with a beard and makeup and a dress on. I'm like, dude, you need to decide. What are you? But you know what? Who am I to judge him?
Right.
The guy's more comfortable in his skin than I am.
Right.
Doesn't give a damn about what people think because he is who he is. And I praise that, actually, in retrospect. I don't, you know, he's not embarrassed of who he is. And you know, and seeing that again, when I have my moments of weakness here, when I question everything, I just say, but you know why you're here. Luke knew what he was. And he came out in Cape Town. It was amazing. He was at a public school, and the principal's a gay man who just absolutely took Luke in hand, and they allowed him to use the staff bathrooms because of the gender specific, and spoke to me on Skype with my wife and Luke together to how we're going to tell the school. And then they sent a newsletter on a Friday to the class. And then they had an assembly with everybody. And everyone embraced.
That's
I thought
so wonderful.
In my generation, if a kid was that, they would have destroyed them. We would
right.
have bullied that child, myself included, small-minded. But we didn't know, you know. We didn't understand. You know, there was transvestites or guys who like to dress as girls. Who knew what it was all about and who cares?
Right.
I had the privilege of having a client named Rain Dove, who's an androgenic model, androgynous model, I should say.
Yes.
Who doesn't identify as either. Amazing chat. I had lunch. I saw Rain Dove on one of our classes and I just messaged and I said, I've got a transgender son. I'd love to chat to you. And we went for lunch and just hearing their outlook on what the world is, it was beautiful. Just saying, I mean, I've seen on social media people literally savagely attack Rain Dove, like disgusting. And he always is, or they always are, I should say, completely chilled with their response and educating people. And what Rain Dove said to me was, Steve, you know, pronouns, genders, these are grunts of things we were taught, making words out of noises.
Right.
He, him, hers, she, who cares? So what Rain Dove said to me is every human being has rights on this planet to shelter, food, water, and freedom. And if my world or my choice isn't yours, we can learn from each other and embrace that, or we can walk away. Stay in your lane, I stay in my lane. Mutual respect for everybody. Don't criticize or judge.
Right.
And then there'd be world peace, truthfully, because who are we to judge the next? I mean, everybody is happy in their lane. If you are a transgender person, how's it affecting my life? If your choice is to be what you were, and it's tough. Like, I'll often make the mistake of calling Luke Tarrant still.
Well, it's only been 2 years,
well, it's
right?
just happened. So I've said to Luke, you need to give me 12 years.
Yeah.
Because I had you for 12 years as a girl in my mind, as my daughter.
Right.
I now have a son who I welcome. And us on Facebook came out for Luke because I have a huge following on social media. And the response was mind-blowing. It was Andrea Bocelli I was listening to, who's my favorite opera singer, well, modern opera. And I wrote from my heart, on behalf of my wife and myself, a Facebook post. And it went absolutely viral. I got messages, my mother, my father, my mother-in-law, and everybody in the family got bombarded by people from all over the world about how beautiful it was and how proud they were of Luke for being such a strong character in a scary world. And going to school, in fact, he was the first transgender child to go to a sleepaway camp and was in a boy's tent with boys, half of whom never knew he wasn't a boy. So, you know, we've been dealing with now what's next. Is it the hormones and the top surgeries? And it's learning all the time. But we're helping others to come out. Unfortunately, there's a very high suicide rate in transgenders in young days because of parents not accepting, not embracing. And as a parent, our one mission in life is when you have children is you've decided to bring life into this world. Your goal is to protect them and make sure they're happy. So it's not about you anymore. And that's what my message was. When my child came to me, I had two choices. I could deny it and isolate my child and lose them.
Right.
Or I could make them amazing. And that's what I chose.
So the Facebook post is still up if people want to read it? Or?
Yeah, it's on my Facebook. Yeah, I still cry every time I read it. It's amazing.
I think it's so wonderful that you're sharing this story.
Well, you know what? I'm proud. I'm super proud. It's to see a human being suffer.
Right.
And to be able to help them to be who they want to be is my gift, and their gift from me is to watch them grow and help others now. So, like I said, they have started groups, support groups, and let others know how cool it is to be who you are and not be scared of who you are and hiding behind what the world says you should be, because who are they? At the end of the day, when you go to bed at night, you go to bed by yourself.
Right.
And you have to be true to you. And everyone who points at fingers during the day doesn't matter anymore because they've gone on with their lives and they're living their truth. So don't live your life to make other people happy. As long as you don't harm anybody and you're doing what's, you know, you're a good person, do
you know, do what makes you happy, as in you can't hide behind what you aren't, you know. And that's it, is my one word I always use now for everything. And it's definitely switch playground, is authenticity. And that is why I cannot stand fake things, including some of the programs that are offered to people around, you know, they think they're getting something they aren't. Right. So what I look at it as is, well, you know what? At least people are getting to do some kind of movement and exercise. It's better than nothing. Mm-hmm. But for them to think they're actually getting more than they are, and then taking a photograph at a logo because you're cool, because you go there, it saddens me. Because for me, it's authenticity is everything. And that is probably why I embraced my child situation so graciously, with such strength. And my thought process in the beginning with all my martial arts and military, anyone messes with them, I'll kill them. And
right.
And even Luke used to get angry. And I said, and Raindove said, you're the first thing your child should do is go into a debate club,
right,
and learn how to teach and deal with. You can't get angry.
Right.
Because people don't know.
Right.
You have no right to get angry at someone else because they don't understand you. You can offer them to learn or tell them to go into their lane and leave you alone. And that's the truth. So being angry is just you actually not understanding the situation. You've chosen this. When I say chosen, that's a word I never use, because you don't choose to be transgender.
Right.
It's not a choice. It is what it is.
Right.
So I think about that every day. My child wakes up a boy.
Right.
And underneath the neck is a girl.
Right.
You know, and that frustration for me must be so difficult. You know, you look down and, you know, you want to go kick the soccer ball and be with the dudes, and there's breasts.
Right.
And female parts, which, you know, I've learned so much about sexual preferences, gender specific, you know, what you are, what you aren't. But more than what I've watched him, I've learned to be strong for me and how to help people be better, even more so as a human being. So he's taught me more life lessons than I knew before at 49.
Yeah.
And at 13, again, I carry that strength with me every day when I'm doubtful of anything here, you know. So.
And we're lucky living in New York City.
Yeah, listen, but, I think the LGBT, the whole, I think with everything, I think, you know, anybody in New York can be whoever they want to be.
Right.
And that's why people come here.
Right.
There's nothing surprises me in New York. I've seen, believe me when I tell you, this is where it's all at. New York is its own planet, and it's an honor and a privilege to be able to live here and share that landscape, because it's the thing is, everybody who's here is here for a reason. No mm-hmm. one's come here to be a waiter, waitress, or to just work in an office. Unless you were born here and that's all you know.
Right.
When you come to New York, you have a very specific goal, and that's to be more than just who you are.
Right.
And that is to shine, to act, to be on, again, the main stage. The American dream lives in New York City.
Right.
And either you have the strength of character to go get it and survive it, or you don't.
Yeah.
And very quickly, New York will tell you who you are and who you aren't. And if you're strong enough to persevere that, and you will do more soul searching and learn more about yourself in this city than you will anywhere else in the world. I truly believe that. And I've, again, literally been through the worst type of training as a human
right.
being, where you've been broken down to nothing. And New York will do that to you, but not as aggressively as the military, but it'll do it to you nonetheless. And you really do learn how to survive. It's amazing. And again, I go back to how brilliant the human being is as a machine
yeah.
on every level. And that's why, for me, to help people be the best they can is what I'm here for.
So. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much. This was really, really great.
Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning in to Marnie on the Move. Head over to our website, MarnieOnTheMove.com, and subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Android, and more. Also, sign up for our newsletter. Just scroll down to the bottom of the site, to the bottom of the website, and hit sign up, because we are gearing up for some really big, exciting announcements, deals, and giveaways. Thanks again for tuning in.